When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
11 o'clock, welcome in. It's time for the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Head and Wes Mitchell along with you on this Monday morning. Chris Clark will be back with us a little bit later on in the week. And, man, I feel bad. Chris is missing all the good conversation to start off the week because, Wes, what a weekend.
It was crazy, man. I feel like I don't know, we could have done a whole show just on the men's basketball, like, final 5 minutes of the game and overtime. And I feel like everything I saw yesterday almost, like, overwrote in my mind, like, in my memory.
Sure.
Everything that happened Saturday, because Sunday, I mean, you go from Saturday women's basketball, incredible moment with a three-pointer, Cardoso hitting her first career three to win the game and advance, to then what happened yesterday. I mean, has to be one of the craziest weekends in recent South Carolina athletics memory.
No, not certainly. And going back to Friday, where South Carolina did not play their best game, turned the ball over 24 times, and, you know, had to fight and claw to beat a Texas A&M team that was coming at them with everything that they had, that kind of gets lost in the shuffle too. And I don't envy anybody that had, like, heart issues on Saturday, because you had men's basketball rolling right into the women's game. So a tough back-to-back there that certainly provided plenty of entertainment, but a lot of highs and lows. And, what a weekend overall. But obviously everybody talking about what went down yesterday, which, you know, I've talked about this several times this morning already. I hate that, and, you know, I got ESPN up here in the studio, and Stephen A. Smith and Shannon Sharp were talking about a little bit earlier, this melee of six players getting ejected between LSU and South Carolina that overshadows what was a really great game between two of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, I have thoughts. So, first of all, I think, you know, Don Staley came out, handled it incredibly, using, you know, not just waiting until the press conference, but using the immediate post-game interview,
right,
to say, look, I apologize to women's basketball fans everywhere for that. And, you know, hey, there's no place in the game for that. However, it's sports. Like, these two, this was a chippy game from the very second it started.
Right.
It was a high-level basketball game. If you told me we were watching the national championship, like, if I just zoomed in from space my first day on Earth, and you were like, that's the national championship, that's the two best teams, they are battling for the national title, I would have believed you, because that was the energy that game had, that was the vibe that game had. And they looked to me like, hey, these are probably two of the best teams easily in the country, maybe the two best teams in the country. So it had that flair with the extra context of LSU won the national title last year without ever beating South Carolina. They haven't beaten South Carolina in 16 straight meetings. So I think there's a little bit of maybe something else to prove for South Carolina. For LSU, they've heard all year long, oh, you're the national champions, but you're still not as good as South Carolina.
Sure.
So there's a little, maybe, I would say, little sister complex, a little bit. That's how LSU plays. Like, it was chippy from the beginning. There was a lot of talk, I would say more so on the LSU side than the South Carolina side. Lots of jawing, and it just escalated. Like, did it need to escalate to the point of Camilla pushing her the way she did?
Mm-hmm.
Of course not. And I think, you know, you saw Camilla tweet. She apologized. She said, that's not who I am. In athletics and sports, when emotions are at a high point, this stuff happens. It's not the end of the world. Would both sides maybe take it back or take it down a notch if they could? Of course, but let's not pretend this doesn't happen in athletics. This was not a brawl. Like, I think to the extent it's been talked about, which in some ways, frankly, you're putting more attention on women's basketball.
Sure.
But when I see some headlines, like even on Three, you know, which Gamecock Central is affiliated with On Three, one of their, you know, breaking down the brawl or a benches clear. The benches did not clear.
The benches stood up and walked onto the court.
Dude, the bench got ejected because the refs felt like they had to enforce the rules, I think, to the finest degree.
Sure.
Those girls weren't running onto the court to start a fight. They were literally tiptoeing, getting a closer look at what was happening.
Elijah brought up the point, and he was there to see it. Like, before, you know, Cardoso comes in and pushes Flauzier Johnson over, there was a timeout. So, because they were going to look at the situation with Flauzier Johnson grabbing Full Wiley and assessing that. So the girls were coming on the court, as you do in a timeout, to huddle up, talk about the next play or whatever it may be. So they were just kind of in the process of doing that. And then when all hell breaks loose, okay, yeah, you're going to walk towards closer to that. But that didn't mean that they were all out there throwing haymakers or anything like that.
I feel like, and I'm, you know, I'm not one of these people that blames, you know, it's very common these days to quote the media. Hey, the media did this to me. And you got to realize the media is taking a big umbrella and covering a lot of different people.
Sure.
So I hate to be the media guy, but I was even watching ESPN right after it happened. You know, they're talking about benches clearing brawl. And I'm like, guys, the benches did not clear. The benches, they did get ejected, yeah, but it was because they took a very literal interpretation of you can't leave the bench area. Those girls were not coming onto the court to fight. And even the word fight, dude, nobody was out there throwing haymakers.
Technically, the benches didn't clear because Sanaya Fagan did stay in the bench area and was allowed to stay in the game.
Again, by
technically did not clear.
By inches. Like,
right.
It, you know, it was, I guess, either it might have been just very smart on her part. I don't know if she knew the exact rule, but or if it was luck. At one point, they said everybody was ejected. I'm like, what did poor Pow Pow do?
She was waiting to check in.
She was waiting to check in, and literally,
fight just happened around
it happened
her.
In front of her, and she looks up like, oh snap, like this is going down. And it's like right in the middle of it.
Right.
And luckily, they got that part right.
Well, and that's why it took them 20 minutes to review all this and go over the video of who did what and who pushed who and all that kind of stuff. It delayed what was a pretty speedy game at that point. I feel like we were on pace to wrap up in around 2 hours, but that completely threw things off track.
Yeah, and again, I get it. In today's world, and you have to, it's called, you know, some people call it clickbait, whatever, but you have to use extravagant headlines to get people to click content. So I get that. It's going to be kind of built up. But to me, the biggest story is you got people from the stands coming onto the court. Like, that should never happen.
Mm-hmm.
But also credit to that police officer who instantly realized what was happening, instantly got on the court himself, stopped it from becoming anything more than it could have been. That was the most dangerous thing about anything that happened. So, yeah, did Camilla maybe escalate to a point that she herself has tweeted that she regrets? Yeah, of course. But, I mean, it's sports, it's athletics. When you have two high, high quality teams playing with this much on the line, with that much physicality.
Sure.
I mean, Camilla's getting her hair pulled at some point earlier in the game. She has a busted lip, which I still didn't see exactly how that happened.
I don't know. It evolved into chaos, and who knows who threw what elbow or fist or whatever it may be.
I feel like, I mean, this was not the 2004 Clemson Carolina football brawl.
Yeah.
Where you've got people throwing helmets into the stands and literal punches being thrown. This was not a brawl. This was a couple of shoves.
Wasn't Malice at the Palace.
No. So, yeah, it does take away, but I think it takes away from what actually happened on the court because it's being built up to be a little bit more than what it was. That's just my opinion. Did some of the girls wish, you know, and even Flauzier for LSU and Dawn Staley, they had a great conversation after. Dawn Staley said it herself, like, this happens. Like, they would want it to happen. Of course not. She apologized. But sometimes things happen in high-level competitive situations. And then, I mean, just to compare the two again and how they carry themselves, Kim Mulkey saying, I wish Camilla would have pushed Angel. Like, what are you even talking about? Like, that's from a supposed leader. Not sure that we should expect any different at this point, but that's your response versus Dylan Staley being like, look, sometimes these things happen, but we apologize.
Right. Well, I brought up the question to Elijah in the last hour that, all right, well, if she did push Angel Reese and Angel Reese fights back, you're not going to play with her in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Is that what you wanted? Because she would have gotten disqualified too. Like, is that where we're trying to go with this? Are you saying she would have beat up Camilla Cardoso? Because I think Cardoso could have handled her own against Reese if it came to that. Like, it's, again, it's a conversation nobody was having about this that you kind of created for no reason.
Yeah, and I mean, Angel Reese walked to the other end of the bench when all this was happening, for one.
Right.
And for two, I mean, Angel Reese was one of the biggest talkers when this whole thing started, when the game started. She was one of the ones jawing from the very beginning. And, you know, did South Carolina respond to some of that? Yes. Did MVP Malaysia Fulwiley hit the "you're too short" on an LSU player? Yes. There was some talk back and forth. It is what it is, but I don't know. The worst part is basically that we just spent 10 minutes on it ourselves. We're all talking about that as opposed to what a great basketball game. Like, these two teams from the very beginning, and I was watching it at home. I wasn't even there.
Sure.
You could feel just the energy and the intensity in this game sitting at home watching. I can't imagine what it was like being there in Greenville. And these two teams, they were both game. South Carolina, I thought, Tyler, probably on four different occasions, was about to put the game away. Much like I felt with the men's team on Saturday.
Right.
I was like, man, they're about to put this thing away. LSU battled back. They hit shots, got a couple stops, hit some big shots, got to the free throw line, and kept it tight for the most part. And so, high-level basketball game, man. Very curious to see, does the selection committee set this up for another matchup between these two teams?
ESPN has exclusive rights to the women's tournament. You want a ratings bonanza? Give us South Carolina and Iowa, or give us South Carolina and LSU again. That would certainly draw a lot of attention. So it'll be interesting to see
how that. You could give us both.
You could give us both. Yeah, there's potential that both could end up happening. So we'll see how that all lines up. Again, as you mentioned, it is unfortunate this kind of overshadowed what was a great weekend of basketball for South Carolina. We'll dive into the specifics of the games themselves a little bit more. coming up. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. He's Wes Mitchell. I'm Tyler Head on your Monday morning here on the
midcourt. Got a catch and shoot here. 1.1 seconds to play. Gamecocks trail 73-71. To Camilla. Three-pointer for the win! Bang! Gamecocks win! Camilla Cardoso! A three-pointer at the buzzer! And the Gamecocks storm the floor! Camilla Cardoso wins it. Her first three-pointer of the year. Unbelievable. And the Gamecocks are in the SEC Tournament Championship. Holy cow.
Welcome back in. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Brad Moeller, I thought he had a heart attack on Saturday listening to that. Calling the final seconds of Camilla Cardoso's buzzer beater three for the Gamecocks to defeat Tennessee 74-73 in the semifinals of the SEC Women's Tournament. You know, if you would have asked me to list out in order who I thought would be taking a buzzer-beating three-point shot for the Gamecocks, Camilla Cardoso likely would have been at the bottom of my list. Had never attempted one in her career at South Carolina. Picked a whale of a time to attempt her first one.
Yeah, and she didn't really hesitate. She saw she was open, and she took it at the urging of her head coach. And I mean, part of the story has to be Tennessee's defense on that play as well.
But at the same time, like, and yes, you know,
Tyler,
one second ago,
even defend that.
But it's like, did you expect her to do it though?
To shoot it or to hit it?
Shoot it.
There was no one within 10. This was a pregame warm-up level wide open three. Like, you have to at least throw your hands up.
Well,
they weren't close enough.
The girl did throw her hands up. She was just 10 feet away.
I mean, I understand the philosophy, I guess, of what they were doing.
Maybe they were so shocked that she was actually attempting the shot. They're like, we don't need to defend that.
They didn't defend her from the beginning. From literally, is 5-on-5 basketball. Everybody's got somebody they're supposed to at least be aware of where they're at.
Well, when Kelly Harper gets fired in a couple of weeks, she can look back on that moment as maybe the one that finally sunk the ship.
Did you feel bad for Tennessee at all in that moment?
Not really.
No?
I mean, I have no animosity against them necessarily, but it's one of those things. And they played a great game. I mean, Carolina was beating the brakes off them earlier in that game. It looked like it was going to be another blowout, as we've seen happen a million times. And they clawed their way back. Rekia Jackson played a great game. They outscored South Carolina in the fourth quarter, out-rebounded them in the fourth quarter, and did everything right. But yeah, just in that moment, that lapse of judgment at the very end, which, again, if they make their free throws before that, we're not talking about this situation. They had a chance to put a nail in the coffin there, and they couldn't do it.
I thought that's a huge point. I thought a huge point to make. Full Wiley and her awareness and her speed, getting the ball down the court, because South Carolina's out of timeouts.
Sure.
Getting the ball down the court, and then she gets fouled, but she had gotten far enough down court that you're then able to inbounds the ball from the side as opposed to having to come full court.
Yeah.
That put South Carolina in a position to even be able to attempt a shot that would have a chance to go in. I get to an extent, like, hey, if you're Tennessee and you're looking at the five potential options, Cardoso shooting a three is the best option for you if you're Tennessee.
Sure.
However, I feel like it's one of those situations. You got to at least throw. It's like when a coach says, "Hey, don't foul a 3-point shooter. It's near the end of the game."
Yeah.
And you just throw your hand into their vicinity in order to distract. At least, maybe that's the difference in the ball going in and not.
It may be so, and maybe it is. And again, look, Kelly Harper is a Division I women's basketball coach for a reason. She's not dumb, but it's one of those situations like maybe you look at it. And again, on the scouting report of everything that Camila Cardoso can do, her 3-point shooting ability probably didn't show up at all. So I imagine their thinking was, okay, well, if anybody's going to take that shot, let's let it be her. So make sure she's as obvious as possible where they take the bait. And then, again, she hadn't attempted a 3-point shot since Syracuse back in December of 2020. Like, you know, the thinking is, I guess, okay, well, she's not going to make it because that's not what she does. And lo and behold, she did. And, yeah, you know, hindsight being 2020, it does look rather embarrassing for Tennessee.
Yeah, and she credit to Cardoso. She hit the shot. She was she met the moment as Markeisha Grant posted on Gamecock Central, and you know, great shot by her. And talk about the emotions of an up and down weekend.
Oof.
For Cardoso.
Her
like
family was there too.
Family was there. You hit the biggest shot of your life on one day, and then late in the game on Sunday, after playing an absolute battle,
right,
you are ejected. And now you're going to have to miss game one, you know, of the tournament as well, the big tournament. So, that had to just be an emotional week for her and her family in terms of everything that took place. But, I mean, you look at this weekend, and it did have everything. Like, from an entertainment value,
sure,
if you're ESPN, the ESPN networks, I mean, women's basketball brings the entertainment.
Oh, it certainly does. And even outside of the SEC, had a very entertaining Big Ten championship game with Iowa and Nebraska going into overtime. Caitlin Clark playing out of her mind as usual. The ACC women's game had a really good finish to it. Like, a lot of great moments. And again, kind of going back to the main point we were talking about earlier, you hate that the main conversation coming away is what happened at the end of the game with the fracas, I guess we could call it, between these two teams. I won't call it a bench-killing brawl, but that's what's dominating the headlines. But, again, a lot of attention on women's sports. I imagine that probably peaked some ratings there in those last couple of minutes because it took 20 minutes for them to, you know, assess all the fouls and the ejections and everything like that, I imagine they probably had a few more eyes tuning in for those last couple minutes to see what was going to ultimately end up happening in that game.
Yeah, no doubt. And even, I mean, here we are. We're trying to talk about the actual game, and ultimately
keeps coming
our minds just naturally head back over to what happened. So I get it. That's human nature. As it is, South Carolina sits at 32-0 this season. And let's talk briefly about Malaysia Fulwiley and just how special she was. She arguably was the difference in this ball game, and not just her point total, but how efficient she was. Like 8 of 12 from the floor, 4 for 4 from the free throw line, played I think 17 minutes, scored 24 points. Like she was the spark, but also it wasn't just her kind of being, you know, she's a spark. She kind of brings something that doesn't necessarily show up in the box score, which she does, but she also showed up in the box score with 24 points and getting open, making smart decisions for most of the game. She had a couple times that got away from her a little bit, but her, I noticed this against Ole Miss for LSU. They are not great at times at getting back defensively. And I don't know if it's a speed thing or if it's more just, I mean, they played 7 girls total.
Right.
Maybe they get worn down. But I don't think LSU is always great at getting back defensively. So when you have the speed that South Carolina has, especially when Fulwiley is on the court, that can matter. And there were a couple of breakaways I thought where South Carolina did a really good job of getting the basketball up the court. And Fulwiley is, she's just so good. She blew a couple layups earlier in the tournament, but usually her touch, even when she is flying to the basket, is so impressive.
And I'll add to that, Tessa Johnson, too, had a very impressive tournament weekend as well. And you wonder with, you know, some of these girls that come in as true freshmen, how they handle tournament environments and playing 3 games in the course of 3 days, which, you know, is getting you set for the NCAA tournament coming up here in a little over a week's time. And they all stepped up to the task. And it only gives you hope and optimism for what the rest of this season is going to be like, but what they're going to be as future, you know, members of this team over the next couple of years, because they certainly stepped up to the moment in big ways.
Yeah, they were up for it, man. And, you know, you could argue Tessa was a huge reason South Carolina won their first game. I mean, that was not Gamecock basketball early in game one for them against Texas A&M, turning the ball over like crazy. Now, they're just so good. They're so talented they can get away with that. But
sure,
they were not playing up to their standard early in that game. And, you know, it looked like, at least for the early parts of the Tennessee game, that was going to just be an easy day for them, because they came back. They were not turning the ball over in that game. They played very well in the first half, and then credit Tennessee for fighting back. But this was a weekend from a South Carolina women's basketball perspective that had everything.
Sure.
Like you had your big moments, you had your lows, you had your memorable moments in terms of the big shot, and then you had your, I would say, future superstar, but actually probably current now superstar, you would say, in Fulwiley on full display in this game.
Yep, absolutely. So an exciting weekend for women's basketball, and they now have a couple days rest waiting for Selection Sunday to find out their ultimate destination in round one of the NCAA tournament, where, again, they will be without Camille Cardoso for that game. But, again, they've been without her for several times this year. This should be fine there. The men's team was in action wrapping up their regular season on the road in Starkville on Saturday prior to that game between the women and Texas A&M. And the men certainly had you on the edge of your seat for that one as well. We'll dive into that coming up. It's Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs here on the game.
Shot clock at 10. Michi out near midcourt. Now starts around the B.J. Mack ball screen. Leaves B.J. wide open, pick and pop three.
Yes.
Good! B.J. buries the three from the top of the key, and Carolina hits another big bucket.
Welcome back in. Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Head and Wes Mitchell along with you on this Monday morning. That was the call on the Gamecocks Radio Network. Derek Scott on the road in Starkville on Saturday. B.J. Mack hitting 1 of 2 threes on the day. That one coming in overtime, helping South Carolina pick up the 93-89 victory against the Mississippi State Bulldogs to wrap up an incredible regular season with a 25-6 overall record. And it was not easy. And the chaos of those last couple of minutes and into overtime were certainly something that, as Wes mentioned a little bit earlier, we could have spent a while on just on that alone. But South Carolina is able to escape with the victory and cap off what's been a historic regular season.
Yeah, if you're listening to us at home or in the car, how many different times did you think South Carolina had this game won? Because I thought it on at least, for one, I thought they were going to pull away in the second half because they were on the verge of doing so. Mississippi State wouldn't quite let them do that. Then a couple of different times late, I thought South Carolina had won the game. They bailed Mississippi State out with a couple of fouls. One of them there at the very end, I can't agree with whatsoever. I thought the Mississippi State guy just basically tripped.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to go back and look at the actual box score. The box score on ESPN credited Jacoby with that foul.
Right.
And the announcers were discussing who the foul was on, but then never really truly announced it. The box on ESPN said Jacoby. I don't see any way he fouled the guy there. So this was, y'all heard of ball don't lie?
Right.
Ultimately, I thought South Carolina deserved to win this game. They went on the road. They, to me, looked like the better team. Credit Mississippi State for battling back. But ultimately, South Carolina, once again, the underdog, according to the metrics and to Vegas in this game, goes on the road, wins another SEC game. There's actually something to this now. There was a one of Lamont Paris's best teams at Chattanooga also was tied for most road wins in the country for that season. And I'm starting to wonder, is there just something about Lamont Paris's even keel nature and that we just, I know every coach kind of tries to go about their business every game the exact same, but this guy, I mean, he is calm, cool, and collected. And that's a cliche, but he embodies that, I feel like. So I just wonder, is it at the point where there is something to that?
I think there certainly could be, especially when you look at the circumstances of what last week was, where you had the highly emotional game. On Wednesday, your chance to lay claim to part of the SEC regular season crown. It leads to a Tennessee team that's one of the very best in the entire country. They're going to be one of the top four seeds in the upcoming NCAA tournament. And you always wonder how you respond to having that kind of letdown in the middle of the week, especially going on the road to a place like the Hump. That's not an easy team, not an easy place to play against a physical team like Mississippi State. And again, they just went out there and treated it like any other game. There didn't seem to be any hangover, as we've seen several times this year. They've never really had that hangover game to game. Yes, you had the back-to-back losses between Auburn and LSU, but I think that's a little bit of a different situation there. But this team has kind of taken on the personality of its head coach. And I think, you know, with that even-keelness and that almost like, you know, dad type of approach where he's not going to yell at you. He's going to, you know, tell you what you did wrong and hopefully help you improve on that going forward. I think that's helped them lead to a lot of success this year.
Yeah, it has. And I think, one, you just look at the total team effort. South Carolina didn't really turn the ball over much, 8 turnovers in the entire game. Going on the road, when Mississippi State made their pushes, as we've seen all year long, South Carolina didn't panic. And then sometimes it's a different guy each game stepping up for South Carolina. And I thought, obviously, B.J. Mack, he had some huge moments in this game, was the leading scorer for South Carolina, hit a couple of big threes. But, man, Colin Murray-Boyles, I think if you look back at this team and you look at who they were in the non-con when we were starting to get an idea like, hey, this team's pretty good. Like, this team's better than we thought. But I think anybody who was looking at it realistically was saying, what is it going to look like once they get into conference play?
Sure.
The difference in that team and the team that we have seen go on to win 25 games and 13 SEC games in the regular season is CMB. And his ability to finish at the rim, his ability to rebound the basketball, another 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 4 steals. They credit him with 1 block. I swear my eyes saw 2.
I know for certain he had the 1 block in the first half that was just picture perfect. And I think he had another one later on in the game. But, yeah, they only gave him 1 in the box score. And, again, he shot 90% from the field, you know, go 9 of 10 for those 19 points. Got one free throw in there as well. And he's a guy that, when you look at his numbers as of late, is heating up at the right time. He's averaging a double-double over the course of the last four games of the regular season. So he's riding a wave of momentum going into the SEC tournament and ultimately the NCAA tournament. And here's a guy that, you know, at the beat, when he finally was cleared to play and came back, we talked about him getting better and better each game from a strength standpoint of getting back to 100%. Now he's just getting better and better from, like, a what production standpoint. It seems like each game is even better than the one before it.
Yeah, I mean, and he's been great the last four, but you could probably go back the last 15 games for this. I mean, go back to the game South Carolina played against Ole Miss at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think right around that time of the year, he really started to come into his own. He didn't quite get a double-double on Saturday, but he basically gets close to a double-double in his sleep at this point. And so he's just been so good for them, man. He and BJ were both so efficient in this game. Like you said, 9 of 10 for CMB, 8 of 11, including 2 for 5 from 3, and for BJ, 7 for 8 from the free throw line for a big man.
Including those last two at the end of regulation, which obviously ended up being of vital importance because Mississippi State got that foul to close things out there. But yeah, very efficient. The team as a whole, 20 of 24 from the free throw line. You know, those are kind of things, especially as you get into tournament play in both the SEC and the NCAA, you're going to be playing in tight games, and being efficient from the free throw line is going to be a big factor.
Yeah, no doubt. I did enjoy, credit where it's due, I enjoyed watching the Josh Hubbard kid. He's
a star.
Yeah, he's spectacular. Doing it at 5'10".
Yeah.
Can jump out of the gym, but hit huge shots for them, man.
He did, and he's somebody else. When these two teams played to open up conference play against each other early January, I don't think people had fully figured him out yet, and he's had this meteoric rise similar to Colin Murray Boyles, and if both these guys stay in place at their respective schools, going to have a lot of battles between these two over the next couple of years.
Yeah, by far two of the best freshmen in the SEC, and arguably probably two of the best in the country. Devastating loss for Mississippi State from their side, but South Carolina now can go into the SEC tournament. Would you love to win it? Of course you would. That would be another exclamation point onto what has been such a special season. They don't get the top four, amazingly, so they're the five seed. But there's no pressure for South Carolina going into the SEC tournament. With 25 wins, 13 wins, like I said, in SEC play, they're in the big boy tournament.
Yeah.
Now you're just playing for seeding. And at the very least, the one thing about playing not in the top four, like not getting that double bye, is you have an opportunity against a team you actually should mm-hmm. beat to go ahead and pad your resume in that first round of games.
Well, you're either going to face Arkansas or Vanderbilt in that action on Thursday, and then if you win that game, you'd be matched up with Auburn, which, again, that looks daunting because you lost that 40-point game on the road there, but that's a much different team away from Neville Arena out there in Auburn. And even if you don't win that game, if you can make that competitive, you know, make it a 5-point game or something like there close to the end, that's still plenty of good momentum to show that you can go toe-to-toe with a team that otherwise blanked you earlier on in the season.
By the way, real quick, you know I hate the everybody's out to get us stuff,
sure.
But Tyler, we got to talk about the net, man.
Oh, no.
Have you seen this?
I haven't seen the updated one for today yet. What is it?
Well, this is, you know, the update since Saturday. 49th.
They dropped.
I know they put efficiency, whatever the heck that means.
Sure.
They plug efficiency into this thing, too. A quad one win.
Yeah.
And you drop.
It's been a funny season as far as the net goes.
South Carolina is 4-4 in quad one games and 7-0 in quad two games. So you have lost a combined four games in quad one and quad two, both of them being in quad one, and you've won 11 games.
I don't know. I don't make the rules. It's weird. But it's unfortunately a part of the reality of college basketball. We'll come back and wrap up today's edition of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs here on the game.
Casas lifting one deep in the air to right center field. This one will not need any wind assistance. It will sail into the back of the Gamecock bullpen. And it's another home run for Carolina. And Gavin Casas has his second big fly of the season, and it is now 18-6.
Welcome back in Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Head, Wes Mitchell along with you for a couple more minutes. Can't leave the baseball team out. They were also in action this weekend. Know it kind of got lost in the shuffle, but they pull off the clean sweep against Longwood, including, and that was what that game was from yesterday, a 22-6 run rule game against the Longwood Lancers to wrap up the series. Gavin Casas hitting that home run, finishing off what was an onslaught of offense this weekend, outscoring the Lancers a combined 42-8 over the course of those three games. Two of those obviously end up being run rules, but it was the last non-conference series of the season. You get set for Ole Miss coming up this weekend, and we're really going to learn about where this team stands in this grind of the SEC schedule coming up.
Yeah, if you look at what they've done at the end of non-conference play, they've kind of done what you are supposed to do against the opponents you're supposed to be. Obviously, South Carolina would love to get one of those back against Clemson, but South Carolina 13-3 right now. They've won five straight. You look at how they pitched this past week, 0.92 ERA for South Carolina's entire staff during this five-game stretch this week, which is exactly what you wanted to do. The offense got on track this weekend and putting up a huge day on Sunday. Now, we've seen this before. This is a team that is willing to take their walks. And the biggest thing that I think stands out to me about a lot of these opponents South Carolina has played so far, they don't have depth to their pitching staffs. And, I mean, South Carolina walked, like, what, 12? No, 12 different players had a walk yesterday.
Yeah.
Not 12 walks, 12 different players walk. South Carolina had 18 walks.
Yeah, they put a lot of men on with free passes yesterday.
On Sunday. So it's not exact. When you score 20-something runs, it doesn't sort of carry over to what you're going to face in SEC play. Sure. Now, that's better than going out there and getting in bad habits, swinging at a bunch of bad pitches, and putting yourself in a spot to where you are unable to stay within the zone once you face good pitching. But, yeah, it's a huge step up with what South Carolina is going to face once they get into SEC play. They're going to be in a lot of games that look just like the Clemson games, in my opinion. That's just the reality of playing in the SEC. There's going to be a lot of one-run type games where you're going to need to execute and you're going to need to kind of be the difference maker in when you're losing. And so that's when we really will start to learn about this team. But I think 13-3, you did have the one setback on a Saturday against Belmont, but for the most part, they've done what you wanted to do against teams you're supposed to beat. And they've now got, I think it's what, 7 run rule wins for South Carolina this year?
Yeah, that sounds right.
I mean, for all the talk after the Clemson game, it seems like the narrative was, hey, this team is not hitting the way they're supposed to. For all the talk about that game or that weekend, they have, I think, started to put up more runs and maybe have started to find themselves offensively, which you kind of thought with the guys on this team. I thought it was great to see Casas going yard. He just has not been himself this year, but we know what's in there. We know what he's capable of. I think when you get him going along with some of these other guys, Kennedy Jones coming on strong, Parker Nolan is a guy who really has scuffled early on, but had some good moments at the plate this weekend. I think when you start to find the depth of this batting order that we thought they had or we know they have on paper, then that's going to go a long way for this team.
Yeah, absolutely. So they'll have one more non-conference game this week. That's against Georgia State before conference play, of course, and then taking on Ole Miss this upcoming weekend. Tomorrow, we're going to be out at Pro Day for South Carolina. Going to get to see all these guys in action as they work out for the scouts. Going to be out there from 9 until noon. It'll be you, myself, and Jay Phillips also going to hang out with us there, as well as we see like Spencer Rattler, Xavier Leggett, all these guys get some workouts in with these scouts tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be fun. That's a big day for all those guys, man. Most of the time, all the NFL teams will be there, and we'll hopefully have some interviews. We're hoping, we did this last year, we're hoping we'll have a bunch of guys, coaches, maybe Coach Beamer, dropping by and hopping on during that 3 hours. So we'll have complete coverage out there. Should be fun.
Absolutely. So that's coming up tomorrow from 9 until noon. Coming up next, it is the halftime show with myself and Dimitri Ravenos filling in for Terry Ford while he is out of town this week. That'll do it for today's edition of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs here on The Game.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.